We're holding on Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis, in the middle of the Mishnah. It's all the Mishnayos of the Perek are jammed together. So we're holding 15 lines from the bottom. Mishnah says, so we've been talking about the different periods in Jewish history when bomos, when private mezbechos were mutter, and when they were not. So now the Mishnah says, Kol HaKodesh Mishikdish in the Shas Isra Bomos. So if a person was Makdish, a Korban, at a time when Bomos were also. So let's say, for example, during the time when the Mishkan was in Shiloh, they could even the Shas Isra Bomos, and then he offered them also during the time when Bomos were also, Mibachutz, and he offered them outside the Azara. Then he's over on all three. He's over on an Eser, because there's an Eser to bring them to the Mishkan. There's a Lois Eser to not shech them outside the Azara, as we learned in the previous Perek. And he's also Chayav Koris, because he's shechting Bachot, as we learned in detail in the previous Perek. On the other hand, what if he was Makdish the animal when Bomos were mutter? So let's say, for example, it was Makdish during the 14 years when the Mishkan was in Gilgal, the Kriven Bashas Isra Bomos, and then he didn't get around to offering it then. By the time he got around to offering it, the Mishkan's been set up in Shiloh, and Bomos are also. Bachutz, now he still went and offered it outside the Azara. Hareel Be'eser, Veloiseser, then there's still an Eser that he should have brought it to the Mishkan, and there's still a Loiseser that he shouldn't have, that he should not offer it outside the Mishkan. However, Be'en Chayovan Aleim Koris, but he's not going to be Chayiv Koris for that. Because as we learned in the previous, parak, the expression of the pasuk was chukas the oilam tiyaz zois lahem, and we said the zois is a miut, only this, not something else, namely only when it was makdish when bomos were also, and offered them when bomos were also. So therefore, so there's no chorus, so, and the pasuk is saying that is really chukas oilam, implying that outside of that was no chorus. So there still is an eser and a lois eser. The third possibility, if he was makdish them when bomos are also, the kriven mashas etzer bomos, and he offered them when bomos are mutter. So now let's say he was makdish it during the 40 years in the desert and then ended up offering it in Gilgal, or he was makdish it during the time of Mishkan Shiloh and ended up offering it in Noiv, etc. Hareela be'eser, then there's only an eser that he delayed and didn't bring it in time. Ve'en behem lois eser, and there's not even a lois eser, let alone koris. So when he had been makdish them by Isra Bomos, then you have the reason he's over on a lois eser is because at that point, well, on Esser and a lois eser, you already have the mitzvah. They have viyum la Hashem. He's supposed to bring it to Hashem, which it says in that parasha of Shkutei Chutz, it parashas Achrimos. So now he wasn't viyum la Hashem. He didn't bring it to Hashem. So now he was mevatel that eser. But now it's Heter Abomos, so now there's no Loisaseh and there's no Kares, because that's only at a time when Bomos are Oser, and right now Bomos are Mutter. Next, the Mishnah says, the Elo Kodshim Kraven B'Mishkan. Now, here are the Korbanos that are offered in the Mishkan, as opposed to on private Mizbechas. Kodshim Shehukdushu LaMishkan. Anytime a person is Makdish Kodshim, by default we assume that they go to the Mishkan. So that means Korbanos Tzibur Kraven LaMishkan. So all Korbanos Tzibur are offered on a Mishkan. You would never bring those on a private Bama. The Korbanos HaYochid, but a person's Korban. I said it wrongly. Kodshim Shehukdushu LaMishkan means that when a person is Makdish and he doesn't need any, he doesn't specify. Yeah, then it means that he needs to go them to the Mishkan. That's Korbanos Tzibur, craving the Mishkan. However, Korbanos HaYochid, Babama. However, a private person's Korbanos, Minas Sam, by default, we can assume that he meant to bring them on a Bama. Korbanos HaYochid, Shavuk, Dushul, Mishkan. On the other hand, even a private person's Korban, even in the time when Bama is Hamutter, when he was Makdish, his own Korban, and had in mind that it should go to the Mishkan, yet Rivul B'Mishkan, it has to still be offered in the Mishkan. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, Kasher Nadarta, Motzah Shasecha Tishma Rasi, so you have to keep what you promised. So he promised to bring it in the Mishkan, so you have to bring it in the Mishkan, not by virtue of the Dinim of Shkutish, but rather by virtue of the Din, that a person has to keep his promises. V'imekriven B'Bomah Potter, however, if he did offer them in the Bomah, he's Potter. Because again, Bomos some mutter, and you can't be mechayiv him for the fact that he was over on his neder, but nevertheless, there's no malchus for that. Next, the Mishnah says, Ma ben bomas yochad the bomas tzibur. Now, what is the actual difference between an individual bomber and the bomber of the tzibur? Again, doing that, as we talked about yesterday, during the time when during the times when bomas are mutter, those were the times when the Oren is either not with the Mishkan at all, or at least not there all the time. In the case of Gilgal, they were constantly taking the Oren to go and fight wars, and they would take the Oren with them. And in the case of Nerv and Gibbon, it was there. The Oren wasn't there at all because it was in Kiryas Yorim and then in Yerushalayim. So during those times, the public mizbeach in the Mishkan is called the Bama Gdola instead. So what is the difference? It's called the Bama Gdola or it's called the Bama Tzibur. So Ma'ben Bama Yochad the Bama Tzibur. What are the differences as far as the procedures of the Avodah? So first of all, smicha. First of all, certain korbanos you have to lean your hands on before the korban is shattered. An ola, a shlomim, a couple of others. So those you only have to do by the bamas tzibur, but not by a private bama. Or shchitas tzochen. The fact that you have to shech certain korbanos in the north of the Azara does not apply by a bamas yochid. And we should realize, by the way, a bamas yochid doesn't even necessarily have to be that it's just a private mizbeach in a person's backyard. A person could build an entire edifice. A person could build a whole, almost replica of the Beis Hamikdash someplace else, and it still has the din of a bamas yochid, and these dinim don't apply to it. They actually found in an archaeological dig in Eretz Yisrael, they found in the city of Arad, they found a whole complex that seems to have been at some point a bama. They found over there inscriptions mentioning Hashem, also mentioning Avodah Zarah Lahavdil, but it seems that this was one of those places where people would go there instead of going to the Beis Hamikdash from Yerushalayim. People from the area would come there to bring their korbanos, which is osher, as we're saying over here, because the Beis Hamikdash has already been built. But again, many of the Malchi Yehuda figured it's kind of the least worst option. The alternative is they're going to outright serve Avodah Zarah, and therefore they kind of left well enough alone until you came to Chizkiyahu and later Yeshayahu, who destroyed all those places and told everybody that you have to bring korbanos exclusively in the Beis Hamikdash. So the point is, even in a place like that, they wouldn't have been required to do smicha and shecht in the north, because as much as it's a whole edifice and it's a whole complex and all fancy and all that, nevertheless, it's not the Beis Hamikdash, and it has the din of a bama siyachad of a private bama. Next, matan soviv, the fact that the blood has to go all around the mizbeach, shtei matanas shein arba, which the result of it is that every side of the mizbeach has blood. You don't have to do that by bama siyachad. Utnufa and to wave a mincha, v'hagosha and to touch the mincha to the corner of the mizbeach before you take the koimetz from it. Those things do not apply by a bamas yochin. What we mean by tnufa exactly? Most menachas don't require tnufa. The only ones that do basically are korbanos tzibur, and we already said korbanos tzibur are not brought by a private bama. So another possibility, Taras HaKodesh points out that maybe the Mishnah means the tnufa of the parts of the shlomim, which have to be waved together with the kohen, and then they're given to the kohen. Maybe we mean that tnufa does not have to be done by a private bama. Anyway, the Mishnah continues. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ein mincha v'bama. Rabbi Yehuda says, never mind whether there's tnufa v'agosha by a mincha. That would imply that there is a mincha, you just don't have to do those procedures. Rabbi Yehuda says, there's no mincha by a bama in the first place, as we will eventually learn in the Gemara why Rabbi Yehuda holds that. Next, getting back to the list, the kihun, there's no, by the Mishkan, whether it's considered the full-fledged Mishkan or the Bama Gdola, you have to have the Kohen in the Siruv. By a private Bama, you don't, as Zohar could do the Avodah. Or Big Day Sharis, in the Mishkan, you need to have the Kohen and need to be wearing the 4 or 8 begotten. By a Bama Khtana, by a private Bama, you don't need that. Or clay sharis, by a private bummer, you don't need clay sharis, you can just use any kind of keli for the korbanos that you're putting over there. We talked about that point in the previous perek, that therefore there's a question, we discussed the question, well, therefore, if a person does nisuch of wine or of water outside the azara, is he chayev, even when there's no clay sharis? And we see that by a bummer katana, you don't need a clay sharis in the first place. The reyach nichoyach, and also the point that the korban has to be a pleasing fragrance to Hashem, which we learned earlier in the Masechta at the end of the fourth parak. That means you're not allowed to roast the parts of the korban that have to be burnt and then put them on the mizbeach, because then once they're roasted, then you already have an aroma of them off the mizbeach, and by the time you put them on the mizbeach, they've lost that aroma. So now, when it comes to a private bum, bum a katana, bum a siyachid, you don't need that, and you're allowed to roast the emurim first before you put them on the mizbeach. Another thing is that there should be a division as far as the blood, the chota sikra, that we learned about a lot earlier in our mesechta. We have certain karbanas, the blood needs to be applied to the top half of the mizbeach, certain ones the bottom half. You don't need all that by a bum. And that the Kohen, in the case of a Bama the Zer, does not have to wash his hands and feet before he does the Avodah. But the Mishnah finishes off as Zman, but the Dinim of Pigul, where he has a thought of Chos the Zmanoi, and the fact that if pieces of a korban are left over beyond the time, you're not allowed to eat them, and that a tome person is not allowed to eat korbanos, those are equal by both, even by a korban brought on a private bummer, those dinim will apply, as we'll eventually learn in the Gemara why that is. So now, going all the way back to the beginning of the Mishnah, we had learned most of the Mishnah yesterday, and the first thing we had said was, he had said the Parah Aduma, that was burnt, Chotzmi Gita, outside of its gas. We discussed yesterday whether the correct Gersa is Sheshochta or Shesorfa is the focus that he shechted it, or that he burnt it outside of its gas. So the gas, as we said, is a hole, it's a cavity in the ground into which they would place the wood on which they're going to burn the Parah Aduma, and then they would place the Parah Aduma on top of that and shecht it and do the whole procedure over there. As the Gemara is going to tell us now, it was a particular place that they had checked to make sure there's no tumor over there. As a practical matter, it was a hole on the ground. The pasture was probably so that the ashes don't scatter all over the place. Interestingly, in our times, somebody did some research on the subject and concluded there's a particular church on Harazesim. There's a bunch of places, a bunch of churches all over Harazesim, but for various reasons. But in any case, there's one of them where he identified that in the courtyard of it seems to be the likely location where they did the Parah Aduma back in the day. Some say it might be someplace else on Harazesim, an area which is nowadays Kvarim. Okay, in any case, the Gemara says, my chutzmi gita. What do we mean when we say that if he burned or shechted the Parah Aduma outside of its gas? What's special about this gas, about this hole in the ground? Now, the Mishnah had told us he's not chayev for kodshim b'chutz. He's not chayev for shechting kodshim outside their proper place. But the fact is, the Torah never mentions anything about a gas. So what's the focus of that? So Amar Rish Lakish chutz mimachem avodah klal. Rish Lakish says what it means is if he shechted the Parah Aduma outside, it is. In other words, all the Torah says is the Parah Aduma has to be shechted noichach pnei Oyel Moed, opposite the door of the Oyel Moed. The Torah doesn't specifically specify a particular spot. As long as you're in front of it, as long as you're opposite the door of the Oyel Moed, you're good. So that would mean, for example, there could be many different places on Harazesim where you can see the entrance of the Heichel, and you're good. So what's the focus on Chutz Megidda? It means outside of a place that was specifically checked to make sure that there's no tumor over there. We have a concept in halacha called kever atahorim. There can be deep underground, there can be a body buried, that, and the tumor breaks through the tumor goes straight up, breaks through all the layers of dirt, and goes straight up, and then anybody who's directly above that will become Tomei. So Rish Lakish understands that when they prepared this gas, they carefully checked underneath it all the way down to until they could be sure that they were rooted in the soil that had never been disturbed, and then there was for sure no mess under that, and then they designated that place as the gas. So now the Mishnah is saying, suppose he didn't do that. Suppose he went to someplace else on Harazesim and shechted the Parah Aduma. Nevertheless, he's not chayev for shchutich. Even though he's not following the proper din, nevertheless, the Mishnah is telling us he's potter. Tosfos discusses the point. In other words, as the Gemara is going to say soon, the Mabul, point to the Shlokish, the Mabul rains fell in Eretz Yisrael, and people died there also, and therefore the point is, so Midaraisa, all you need is you can't burn in a place of Tumah. But the Midarabanan, we require to carefully check, and therefore the Shlokish is saying that the Chiddush of our mission is, even if he didn't particularly check a place, and he just went and checked with the Parah Aduma there, then it's okay. Rabbi Yechanan says, why do you need to check a specific place? Why do they call Eretz Yisrael Baduka? Isn't all of Eretz Yisrael have a chazaka of being checked, that there are no mason over there? And unless we know, if we find out, we find out, but we don't have to suspect that there's Tumas HaTahorim anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. Ella, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan says, no, that's not the folk, that's not the chiddush of the Mishnah. It's rather, because then Shechta, the Snimmin, from this Yerushalayim, we're talking about, let's say, he shechted it within the walls of Yerushalayim, and the fact is, the Parah Adroma has to be shechted outside the walls. So nevertheless, so you would think that maybe he's chayav for Shechut Echutz. Maybe, in other words, the idea is, the same way as a korban is supposed to be shechted in the Azara, and he shechts it outside, then he's chayav, maybe vice versa. Something which is supposed to be shechted outside the walls of Yerushalayim, if he shechts it inside, he should be chayav. The Mishnah is telling us that not. We talked about before, the Altareva talks about in Tanya and Igeres HaKodesh Chofres, some Altareva talks about it more in Oda Torah, about the deeper idea behind the fact that the Parah Adruma is shechted outside of the three Machnas, because it goes to a place higher than all Korbanas, and some Altareva focuses also, since it's Matarim with Tumas Nes, so it means, in other words, it represents Tshuva. And Shuvah, you can be even Chutz L'Sholosh Machnas. You can have a Yid who's as low as possible outside the whole Kedusha of Yerushalayim, and nevertheless, you work on him and you bring him back. So now the Kedusha is, even though he shechted it inside the walls, which is not where the Parah Adruma belongs, nevertheless, he's Potter. And the reason he's Potter is because, as we talked about in the Mishnah, it's not Rory Wavoy or Pesach Oyo Moed. This is not something that was meant to be brought to the door of the Oyo Moed in the first place. Tosfos points out a couple of reasons why. For one thing, because what else would you do with it? You would, it's a female animal. You can't bring it as an ola. You could bring it as a shlomim, but there's no such thing as a shlomim of the tzibur. In fact, there's no korban of the tzibur that's female at all. It's also kodesh benek habayis. You can't change it to kodesh mizbeach. So there's no possibility that this animal could ever be brought as a korban tzibur, and therefore he's potter for shechting it outside the place. So the Gemara says, why does Rabbi Yochanan have to understand the Mishnah that way? Why can't Rabbi Yochanan understand that it means he did shecht it outside the wall, but it wasn't opposite the door of the Oyel Moed? And now, you can't say that Rabbi Yochanan holds that you don't need to, that you can shecht it anywhere on Har HaZeisim, even if you don't see the door of the Heichal, because the Omer of Adab Abba shecht it shalai keneged HaPesach Psula. If you shecht it to the Parah Adruma, not directly opposite the door of the Heichal, then it would be possible. Shenema v'shochat, because the posit, v'shochat v'hiza, because the posit says he should shecht, and he should sprinkle. And the sprinkling, the posit clearly says, should be noichach pnei Oyel Moed, opposite the door of the Oyel Moed. Therefore, we learn a hekesh. Mahaza osa keneged HaPesach, the sprinkling has to be towards the doorway of the Heichel. So he's standing on Har HaZeisim, a few hundred feet from the Heichel, but he's sprinkling in the direction of the Heichel. Elsewhere, by the way, the Gemara, the Mishnah tells us in Midas, the Gemara discusses it, I think, in Yuma, that the eastern wall of the Har HaBayis had to be made lower than the other ones, otherwise he doesn't have a line of sight to the door of the Heichel, because when you consider the difference in elevation between the different parts of the Beis HaMikdash complex, you would come out, if you had a normal height wall, and you just had to look through the doorway, through the eastern doorway of the Azara, of the Ezra Sinashim, you wouldn't be able to see the front door of the Heichel. So therefore they had to make the wall low, so he's able to look over the wall and be able to see part of the door. In any case, the point is, so we see that it has to be done dafka opposite the Heichel. So it has to be then that Rabbi Yochanan agrees with that. So in other words, we could say Rabbi Yochanan would agree that it's possible. Nevertheless, he would say the chiddush of the Mishnah is he's not chayav for shechting the Parah Adruma. You're going to say maybe Rabbi Yochanan doesn't hold of that hekesh, and he does in fact hold the Parah Adruma as kosher no matter where you shecht it, as long as it's outside Yerushalayim. No, we have a discussion about Midorim on exactly that point. Shecht the shloi keneged HaPesach, if he shechted it not in front of the door of the Heichel, but in some other direction, Rabbi Yochanan says it's possible because the same hekesh that we just said, the shochat v'hizo, the pasuk says he should shecht it and he should sprinkle. So therefore that means the sprinkling has to be towards Oyel Moed, and therefore the shechit has to be there also. The shlokah shamak sheder, the shlokah says it's kosher because all the pasuk says I'm the chutz machna the shochat. All the pasuk says it has to be outside the machna, and there he shechts it. So according to the Shlokish, you don't have to shecht it opposite the door. the Itmanami, and there was also a discussion that these couple of lines are in parentheses, and then a couple of acronym points out, so the Son Kotrim, because as ever, point out that Tosfos does not seem to have that. Tosfos just goes straight to the burning, which is that there's also a discussion, so for Shalak and Egedah Pesach, what if he burns the Paradoma, not opposite the door of the Hazel? Rabbi Yechon Ramak Sula, Rabbi Oshia Ramak Shera. Rabbi Yechon says it's possible, Rabbi Oshia says it's not sure. Rabbi Yechon Ramak Sula, because again, a similar hekesh. The Sorat Vihiza, the Pesach says you should burn it, and it says before that, that he should sprinkle the blood. So the sprinkling of the blood has to be done opposite in the direction of the Hechel, and towards the direction of the door of the Hechel, where it says so explicitly. So Rabbi Yechon learns the burning also has to be done in front of the doorway. But Rabbi Oshia says no, it's kosher, because he learns when the Pesach says, Al Pusha Yisra, the Pesach says that you should burn the Parah Adumah together with everything, including together with Pusha. The simple meaning of Pusha means it's waste. But Reb Oshia is doubting in the word Pirusha, Mokum Shepereshes Lemisa, in the place where the Parah Adumah separates from this world and goes to die. So in other words, Rashi explains, you shef an animal, afterwards it tends to move around convulsively a bit, eventually it stops doing that. And at that point, then that's the place, says Reb Oshia, you see from the Pesach, that there it has to be ruined. Al Pusha, in the place where it's separated from its last vestiges of life to death. Now, we never find in the Pesach a place, and we never find in the Pesach that there's a particular place where the Pirkus has to end. Therefore, Reb Oshia says, the Pesach is also implying that the ruining can also take place wherever you want. Now, at this point, we're going to assume that Rabbi Yochanan then makes both Hekeshim. He holds that there was a Hekesh between the Shchita and the Hazar, and between the Hazar and the Burning, and all of them, he's saying, have to be in the same place. So it comes out, Rabbi Yochanan would say, that if you don't do it opposite the door of the Hechel, then it is in fact possible. So why does Rabbi Yochanan have to explain that the Mishnah is talking about where he shechted it? Inside the walls of Yerushalayim, let him explain. Even he did it outside the walls of Yerushalayim, but he did it not connected to Pesach and the Parah Adumah is also, and nevertheless the Mishnah is being the Chadish for us that nevertheless he's not Chayev for Shchut Echutz. So why isn't Rabbi Yochanan learn the Mishnah that thing? And the answer is Amri, the Bnei Yishuv answered Loi Meboya Kalman. The Mishnah, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is telling us one of these needless to say things. Needless to say, if he shechted it outside the wall of Yerushalayim and not in front of the doorway, then of course, then the shechita is possible. The rachuki rachka, he took it far away from where it's supposed to be. It was supposed to be on one particular side of Yerushalayim, and he went to a different side where you can't even see the door of the Hechel. Ella, afilu lifnim minachoyma. But you would think, what about if he did it inside the wall? The Karuvi Karva, he brought it closer to the Beis Hamikdash, the Ema Kiskasher, maybe you would say that it is kosher, Kamash Malan, therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, no, the Mishnah wants to stress for us that nevertheless it is possible because he did it inside Yerushalayim and has to dafka be chutz l'sholosh machnas outside of the machna in the Midbar or outside of Yerushalayim in the time of the Beis Hamikdash. Because it requires chutz l'sholosh machnas. That's the chiddush of the Mishnah. That it's not just a matter where he did it in a place where he can't see the doorway, even if he did it in Yerushalayim itself. We're in a place where he can see the doorway of the Hechel. Nevertheless, it's possible because this one dafka has to be outside sholosh machnas. Okay, so that's how Rabbi Yochanan understands our mission. Now we said in the discussion before, so when the Shlokish had said that there has to be dafka, a gas for the Parah Adumah, and that has to be bodur, the ground there has to be carefully checked ahead of time to make sure there's no tumor underneath it. So Rabbi Yochanan said, why is that necessary? The whole Eretz Yisrael's bedukahi is pre-checked, and we assume that there's no place in Eretz Yisrael where there's tumor. So the Gemara says, b'mai kumifiki, what is the underlying machlokas? So the answer is, Mar Sova Yored Mabul Eretz Yisrael. Rish Lakish holds that the Mabul rains fell in Eretz Yisrael just as they did everywhere else, and therefore the result is that there are going to be bones of Mason from the Mabul are embedded into the ground, and now the Truma from them will go straight up, Truma Bakas Va'ola, and the result is that anybody who's above there is going to be Tame, and therefore we need to carefully check and make sure that we get down all the way to virgin soil, make sure we're below a level where even the rains and the marble didn't touch, and therefore there are no mason below that, and therefore we're good. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan holds that the marble did not fall in Eretz Yisrael. There's quite a bit of discussion about two factors over here. First, we're saying that if there are mason of the marble in the ground, then it would mean that we're tomei from them. The question is, this is 800 years before Matan Torah. There are no Jews yet. A number of Achronim bring up the point that in that case, there's no tumah from them anyway. The Gemara mentions in Nazir that such mason are not metame ba'oil, they're not metame if a person overshadows them, and in this case, isn't that the problem? We're talking about they might be a couple of dozen feet deep in the ground, and you're tumas oil, you're overshadowing them walking by, but the Gemara elsewhere says that mason from before Matan Torah are not a problem with that. So first of all, there's machloekus about that point. Reb Shimon mentions in various places in the Gemara. We're actually going to have it today in Ein Yaakov as well. Bez Hashem, that Reb Shimon holds that the Gvorim of Goyim are not Matama Ba'oil, but the Chachamim disagreed. So that's one point. But Tosfos elsewhere discusses even the Chachamim agree that a mess from before the Marble is not Matama Ba'oil, that a mess before Matan Torah is not Matama Ba'oil. So what's the problem over here? So one possibility is that we're talking about actual Tumas Maga. There might be that pieces of bone actually are on the surface and mixed with the soil, and they might touch things. Then there's different explanations. Maybe it means when the Gemara in Nazir talks about, the Gemara uses the expression of their lifnei hadibur, mason from before the mitzvah of Torah Adruma and the mitzvah of Tumas Mes was given. Tosfos discusses in Nazir a possibility that might mean Jews who died during the time between Matan Torah and the giving of the mitzvah of Torah Adruma and of Tumas Mes. Their bodies are not metamed, but that wouldn't apply to goyim from before Matan Torah, including the people who died during the Mahal. And there's other answers as well. There's an explanation from the Vilna Goyim that even with mason from before the Dibur, where the Gemara doesn't mean that there's no tumah with them at all it means is when there's tumah ritzutza, when there's no open space of the tefach above the mess, and therefore the tumah is considered ritzutza, which literally means crushed. In other words, it's embedded within the ground, then yes, it will be metame when it goes up. So there are different possibilities, in other words, why Reish Lakish is concerned about the mason of the marble. And Rabbi Yochanan is telling him that's not a problem because the rains and the marble did not fall in Eretz Yisrael. Now comes to the other problem with that, which is Tosfos discusses, what do you mean? The Pasuk says all the mountains were covered, and that includes Eretz Yisrael. Tosfos brings a story from the Medrash, where one time Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi was walking along with a certain yid, a cattle driver, a Pashut yid. They met up with a kusi, and we know that the kusim famously have a hal glizin, is their sacred space. They consider it for them, it's their holy mountain, like the Havdol HaMaria is for us. And the kusi tries to convince them to go to hal glizin and worship over there. But he says, you want to know how special hal glizin is? Even the marble did not affect it. So the yid, the posh of the yid, the cowherd, says, the cowherd says to Rabbi Shmuel, can I give him an answer? And Rabbi Shmuel says, sure. So the yid says to the kusi, let me ask you, is hal glizin under the heaven? Well, yeah, where else would it be? No, the yid tells him, the pasuk says, all the mountains under the heaven were covered. And of course, he had no answer to that. Rabbi Shmuel was very pleased with that. He says, you know, it's like you have the pasuk, there won't be any sterile, any infertile people among you or among your animals. We can also understand that what that means is there's no yid, even the simplest yid, who works all day with animals, is not infertile and barren of Torah. Even a yid like that is able to answer a goy and then is able to answer a kusi like that and get rid of them. Anyway, the point is that, yeah, according to that, it comes out that the marble did fall on Har Gerizim and on the rest of the mountains in Eretz Yisrael.
Is that
So Tosfos gives a couple of possible answers. It can mean the Gemara is going to explain soon. It's not like the people in Eretz Yisrael were safe in the marble. They got killed in an ulcer, but the Gemara is going to say later, they got killed by the heat. Very well, then. It means that here, the Kursi is trying to claim that the marble didn't affect how grism at all, and this simple Yid answers him, even if you're not going to say the marble rain fell there, the fact is the people there were killed by the heat. Also, Tosfos says, listen, you know, it might have wanted to be things doicha b'kash. He's pushing him off with a weak answer, and just the Kursi couldn't find an answer on the spot. In fact, we may indeed well say that the marble did not in fact fall in Eretz Yisrael, and just the Kursi didn't have an answer for that. It would mean, in other words, that wherever the marble rain fell, the waters covered the mountains, but not necessarily in places where the marble never fell in the first place, namely Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, so in any case, the point is we have a machlokas, we have shlokish, and Rabbi Yochanan over here, whether the marble rains fell in Eretz Yisrael. Omer of Nachmi Yitzchok, Ushnei Mikra Echad Doshim, so Rabbi Nachmi Yitzchok says, you should know, Rabbi Yochanan and shlokish are both darshaning their opinions from the same pasuk. A pasuk in Yechezkel, criticizing the Jews for doing Averis and not doing Tshuva, and Yerushalayim and the Beis Hamikdash are going to be destroyed if you don't do Tshuva. So he says, Ben Adam, Hashem says to Yechezkel, Ben Adam, son of man, mortal, which is Hashem's nickname for Yechezkel throughout the Sefer, Emor Lo, say to Eretz Yisrael and to the Jewish people there, At Eretz Loy Metoharahi, you are a land that was not cleansed, like Gushma B'yom Zom, it was not rained on the day of anger. So, Rabbi Yochanan says, "Asmur mas masmakra." According to Rabbi Yochanan, the pasuk is meant as a rhetorical question. Eretz Yisrael mi loy metahara at? Are you really a land that is not cleansed? Klum yodu alayhi shomim b'yom zam. Did the rain of the marble even fall on you on the day of Hashem's anger? So you don't even have mesig marble. You don't even have dead people from the marble. So you're a land that has tara. And so how did you become so tome? So according to Marsha points out that actually, according to him, the loy metahara, he is a rhetorical question, loy gushma b'yenzam would be a statement of fact. The fact is, you were not rained on in the day of Hashem's wrath during the marble, and therefore you don't have mason embedded in your soil. Rishlokish understands the first part of the pasuk as being a statement of fact. Eretz loy metaharat, you are in fact a land that's not cleansed. You have in you mason of the marble. Loy yodu alayach to shamim b'yemzam. Didn't the rains of the marble fall on you in the day of Hashem's wrath as well? And therefore, there can be mason embedded in your soil all over the place. So therefore, so both of them are understanding the pasuk in different ways and coming out with different results as a result of it. The Kli Yochor mentions an interesting idea based on this, following Rabbi Yochanan's opinion that the rains and the marble didn't fall on Eretz Yisrael. He says, on the other hand, you know, the rains and the marble also had the purpose of cleansing the world and making it. Up until that point, the very fact that people live on the earth makes them more susceptible to terrible avedas as they were doing in the time before the marble. Now, after the marble, it kind of cleaned that up. And Chassidus also, we talk about the marble was like a giant mikveh for the world. So now the result is only Eretz Yisrael still has that capability of causing that the people in it do Averis, and that is why, he says, that is why Eretz Yisrael, more so than any other country, will not tolerate people who do Averis, because like it feels it's kind of its fault that they did those Averis in the first place, and therefore it'll vomit people out who do such serious Averis, as the Torah tells us in Parashas Achron Mos in Kedoshim. So it all goes back, he says, to the fact that it wasn't rained on and cleaned up during the marble. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Eisvei Rishlokish Lavirhanan." So Rishlokish says to Rabbi Yochanan, "I have a contradiction. So you're telling me the marble rains did not fall in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you don't have to be concerned anywhere in Eretz Yisrael that there are bones or pieces of bodies in the ground." But we learn in a Mishnah in connection with Parah Adumah. Now they would take extreme precautions when it comes to the Parah Adumah to prevent as much as possible even the slightest degree of possibility of tumah. Really, the reason behind it, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, is midaraisa. The halacha is that a tzvul yoyim, we've learned this earlier in the Masechta, tzvul yoyim is allowed to prepare the parah adruma. There came a point when the tzvukim came along and they were arguing with that and claiming it can't be a tzvul yoyim, it has to be somebody who's fully tahor. So the chachamim, to counteract that, made a new rule that always the Kohen who does the Parah Adumah should dafka be a Tzvor Yom. We discussed earlier in the Masechta how exactly they make him that. In any case, once they did that, though, they were concerned people are going to be careless and think the Parah Adumah, we don't need to be careful with rules of Tumah V'Tahara against it. So they imposed all kinds of detailed rules to make sure that the utmost degree of Tahara is kept when it comes to preparing the Parah Adumah. So the Mishnah describes as follows. Chatzeres hayub Yerushalayim, there were courtyards in Yerushalayim, Bnuyas alasela, that were built on solid rock, however, underneath them, they hollowed out spaces in case there's Kevrat Tahoyim. So they had, there were vaults underneath these chatzeres, so that even if there's any tumor underground, it wouldn't be able to spread through to the surface, because it would be blocked by the oilim. Umevien noshim ubaras v'yoldas, they would bring pregnant women. These would be women who would either volunteer for the purpose or who they would draft for the purpose, and they would pay them a cent. They would pay them for it. So these pregnant women would come, the yodas, they would give birth in these courtyards. And that way, the children, when they're born, for sure, there's no possibility that these children can be tummy mess. They're born at home or in a hospital or whatever. There's always the possibility that they became tummy mess from that there could always be the possibility that they're coming this. But now, since they're born in these courtyards and they weren't coming this from birth, so they would be born over there, umagadlas shambaneim, and these women would raise their children over there. Tosfos points out the children still would be tomei by having touched a nidder or a woman who gave birth. That's not a problem because they just want to prevent them from having tumas mes. And they want to have these boys won't have tumas mes from birth, and they also won't have tumor yotzal and migufan. They don't want to have a tumor that comes out of their own bodies to just carry or dissolve. So therefore, they would have them do the parah adumah when they were young boys, 7-8 years old, where they're too young to become a baal keri. And as far as the fact that they became tomei from a nidah, fine, that's not a problem. All they need to do is go to a mikveh for that. Anyway, they would be raised in these chatzeres and stay there. Until they would live there until they're 7 or 8 years old, which means, by the way, they would have to be doing this long in advance, by the way, because the Parah Adumah itself can't be that old. So it means when they start realizing that the ashes of the Parah Adumah are starting to run low, and in a few years they're going to need a new Parah Adumah, at that point they would start having these women come to these courtyards, etc. So they would raise their children, La Para, specifically for the purpose of being able to help prepare the Parah Adumah. Umevien Shvarim, when it came time for them to actually fill up the water that's going to be used for the Parah Adumah ashes, they would bring oxen, because oxen have very wide backs, Val Gabean Glossus, and they would put doors on the backs of the oxen, so you have a nice wide platform for the kids to sit on. Tosfos points out that in other words, the idea is that this way, in the places where they're going from these chatzeres, the chatzeres themselves are proof against Tumas Mes, but they have to go down to the Shiloyah spring at the edge of Yerushalayim. They might conceivably go over a Tumas HaTahoyim there by having the oxen with wide backs and then doors on top of them. Then they would prevent them from becoming Tomei with Tumas Mes during that point as well. Tosfos discusses, the Gemara explains elsewhere, would the doors actually help? It's called oil zorof, it's called a moving oil. So in any case, the point is, so this way, even on the way down to Shiloyah, they're protected from Tumas Mes. So the Tinokas Yoshman Aleh, and the kids would sit on those doors on top of the oxen. The koisis shall even be yada, and they would be holding stone glasses, stone cups, because the stoneware is not makabel truma. So the point of all this is, in other words, Rish Lakish is saying, you see that Eretz Yisrael is very likely to have tumas tahoim in it, otherwise why do they need to go through this whole rigmarole? Anyway, the Mishnah continues, Umilu, they would go to the Shiloyach and fill up water in the cups, the Yoshua Gemkaiman, and then they would go sit back on the places, on the doors, on top of the oxen, and go back, and that's it. They've done their job now, and now we have, the Parah Adumah has helped, and now they put the Parah Adumah, so now Tosfos points out, they can't put the ashes into the Parah Adumah into the water. For that, you need a gadol. For that, you need an adult. But at least they wanted to do as much as possible, that should, so Tosfos doesn't give an answer over here, but elsewhere, Tosfos gives an answer, and then the certain Kodshim adds it in the Gemara over here, that whatever they could do, they would do. It's true. When they come to the point of Kiddush, there's no way they can't have the children do it, because the Pasuk says it has to be an Ish, but at least they would do what they could. In any case, the point is that we see from that that there was a concern of Tumas HaTahorim in Yerushalayim itself and on the way down to the Shiloyach. So what are you telling me, Rabbi Yochanan, there's no Tumas HaTahorim in Eretz Yisrael? The answer is, Omer Avon Rebbe Yehoshua, Mila Osu B'Para. This is one of those things where they made a Mila, where they went the extra mile when it comes to the Parah Adruma, again, because of to counteract the Tzedukin. It's true, it shouldn't technically be necessary, according to Rabbi Yochanan, but they wanted to demonstrate it to the ultimate degree that we're taking every possible precaution against Tumah, even though you're right, objectively, it shouldn't be necessary. And Gemara continues, Eisvid Rabbi Yochanan l'Rish Lakish. Fine. Now, on the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, I have a contradiction to you. Now, Tosfos points out, I mean, Rish Lakish also knows that Milo also Bapara, but he's saying that if the marble didn't fall on Eretz Yisrael, then this is really going too far. But Rabbi Yochanan is going to answer that no, we would still, there's no such thing as going too far. So now the Gemara says, Eisved of Yochanan of Rish Lakish. Now, conversely, Rabbi Yochanan has a question on Rish Lakish. You're telling me there can be mason from the marble in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore that we have to be concerned about Tumas HaTahorim. Whenever Braisa tells a story, Pabachas Motsu Atzomes Belushkas Dira Eitzim. One time they found bones in the chamber in the Beis Mikdash where they kept the wood. They had a wood supply for the Beis Mikdash for the Mizbeach, and they would have Kohen and Baal and Mumim there checking the wood to make sure that there were no wounds in it. And one time they found bones in that chamber. Obikshu ligza tomar Yerushalayim. They were going to say that we have to declare Yerushalayim to be tomim. We stop it until we check. What about there might be bones in other parts of the city as well? Omer Rabbi Yeshua Raglav Omer. Rabbi Yeshua got up on his feet and said. Now, interestingly, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out that Rabbi Yeshua over here may not be the regular Rabbi Yeshua in Shas. Because regular Rabbi Yeshua is a Talmud of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. If this was during the last few decades before the Churban, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai is the Rebbe. Rabbi Yeshua is a Talmud. He's not going to be speaking up and tasking in Halacha in the presence of his Rebbe. And if you say that it was before that, then even Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai was not teaching the Jewish people yet, and certainly Rabbi Yeshua his Talmud wouldn't. Rather, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that Rabbi Yeshua over here must be some earlier Rabbi Yeshua. Maybe Rabbi Yeshua ben Beseira, maybe Rabbi Yeshua, the Gemara mentions elsewhere as the name of a son-in-law of Rabbi Akiva, etc. Anyway. So Rabbi Yeshua, whichever Rabbi Yeshua it is, stood up on his feet for Omar. He says, Loy Bushu, Slimahishin, Wanu, it wouldn't it be an embarrassment and a shame for us, Shinigza Tuma al Iravisenu, that we should declare Tuma on the city of our ancestors? If you're worried about Mason, I ate Mason marble. Where are all the dead of the marble? And you see that nobody was concerned up until now about Tuma in Yerushalayim. I ate Mason Nebuchadnezzar. Where are all the people who were killed by Nebuchadnezzar? In Yerushalayim. We've never been concerned about that. Obviously, they must have cleared away all the remains of bodies over there. So therefore, there's no place in Yerushalayim now that we have to worry about Tumah. Well, Midikar Mahachi, well, the very fact that they were not concerned about the Mesei Mabel, Wadla Member de Lehavu. So Rabbi Yochanan assumes it means they weren't, there never were Mesei Mabel, that it assumes that Rabbi Yeshua is saying that there were never any Mesei Mabel in the first place. So the Rosh Lakish answers right back, the Litaimeich, well, according to your Svara, what do you mean? Harugin of Chamnetza, Hokinami de Lehavu? You're going to tell me that the people were killed by the Nebuchadnezzar, there were no such people in Yerushalayim? Of course there were. Ela Havu, all of them, Yeshua means, is there were people who were killed by the Nebuchadnezzar, Upaninu, but they cleared them away later on. People came and buried them and then moved the bodies and buried them. Hochanami, Havu, Upaninu, the same way it could be. The Mesei Mabel, any ones that they found, they took away and buried. So therefore, but that doesn't mean that they got every single one, as he's going to go on to say. Tosfos points out that even Rabbi Yochanan is going to say later in the Gemara, again, the people in Eretz Yisrael did not survive the marble, except for the only ones who survived were Noach and his family, and Oreg, as we're going to say later. The people in Eretz Yisrael died from the heat. So even Rabbi Yochanan should consider that maybe there could be bones and then remains from the marble over there. Tosfos leaves the question open. Maybe Baal Bachlish would say if they only died of the heat, they remained on the surface, and as soon as the marble is over, it's very easy to pick them up and take them elsewhere, as opposed to if we say they actually were killed in the marble and buried underground, not necessarily would they have found all of them. So here, the Shlokish is saying, the E'afnu, now you have to ask, according to my Svara, if they actually cleared away the bodies, if need, then you would say, well, then they've been cleared away. And the answer I would tell you, says Rosh Lakish, Nihid Ifni Yerushalayim. Sure, they may have cleared them away thoroughly from Yerushalayim. But Mikola Eretz Yisrael Ifni, they wouldn't necessarily have cleared them away from all of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore, in fact, it is very possible that in the rest of Eretz Yisrael, you will find Mesei Mabul, because again, Rosh Lakish holds that the rains of the Mabul fell in Eretz Yisrael as well. That's one version of how the question went. So according to this version, Rabbi Yochanan had asked Rosh Lakish that from Rabbi Yeshua's statement that seems to imply that there were no Mesei Mabul in Eretz Yisrael, and Rosh Lakish answers, no, on the contrary, the statement means there were Mesei Mabul, they cleared them away, at least from Yerushalayim, and therefore Rabbi Yeshua is saying, how can you now, all of a sudden, just because you found some bones, think that it means the whole Yerushalayim is suspect of having tumor in it? Ikadami. Some say the discussion went the other way around. Esrei Rosh Lakish l'Rabbi Yochanan. In the second version, it's the other way around. Rosh Lakish asks Rabbi Yochanan, when Rabbi Yeshua says, Ayin Mesei Mabul, Ayin Mesei Nevuchadnezzar, where were the dead from the Mabul? Where were the dead from the Nevuchadnezzar? My lab, wouldn't it mean? Rabbi Yeshua seems to be implying, Midahani Havu, Hani Nami Havu. The ones from Nevuchadnezzar, of course, were there. It's a historical fact that Nevuchadnezzar's army killed many Jews in the Yerushalayim. Hani Nami Havu, then we would assume that Rabbi Yeshua means that there were dead of the Mabul there as well. So then the question would be from Rosh Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, how can you tell me there were no Mesei Mabul in Eretz Yisrael, at least not from the rain, when Rabbi Yeshua seems to be very clearly implying that they were? And the answer would be, according to this version, Midi Iriya, what kind of a question is that? Hokadi Issa, Vahokadi Issa, each one is its own thing. Mesei Nevuchadnezzar, he means, of course there were, but they've been cleared away since. Mesei Mabul, he would be saying, Rabbi Yeshua would be saying there were no Mesei Mabul here in the first place. Okay. The Gemara continues, Esrei, Rosh Lakish asks on Rabbi Yochanan, Shita Mukhabetta spells it out, Esrei Rosh Lakish l'Rabbi Yochanan. The Pasuk said, by the Mabul, Mikol Asher b'charav v'mesu, everything that was on the dry land died. And that means in Eretz Yisrael. So the Shlema, the Didi, Damin, Yorid, Mabul, Eretz Yisrael, so I, Rosh Lakish, will hold that the rains and the Mabul fell in Eretz Yisrael, Mishumachi Mesu. Well, that explains, people were killed there by the Mabul, same as they were everywhere else in the world. But you, Rabbi Yochanan, who hold that there was no Mabul, that the rain, the Mabul never fell in Eretz Yisrael, my Mesu, then why did people die over there? And the answer is Mishum Hevla. They died because of the heat. There was tremendous heat in the world at the time of the Mabul, and that's what killed them. Global warming, basically, you could say. Kedav Chista, as Rav Chista said, the Amr Rav Chista, Beroyschen Kilkalu, the generation of Mabul messed up and did Averis involving boiling substances over Roshchen Nidonu, and they were judged and punished also using boiling substances. But Roshchen Kilkalu B'Shechazera. When it says they did bad with Roshchen, that means B'Shechazera, which comes out of the body, huh? They were, Rashi elsewhere explains they were Hashchosas Zera, they were Mimotzi Zera Levatala. We find in the Pesukim also they were having relations with women that they're not allowed to, and with males, and with animals, and so forth. So there were various involved Roishkin, involved boiling Shechas Zera, over Roishkin Nidoinu, and they were punished with the boiling water of the Mabul, and we know the water of the Mabul was boiling, because here, by the Mabul, it says, when the rain finally stopped, and the water stopped surging, the passage says, the water calmed down, we find in the Gemara Esther, the same Shoresh, the anger of the king calmed down. So we see, and the word vayashoyku implied, just like heat, just like anger is hot. And then as the anger cooled off, the same way the water of the Mabul was hot, and now it began to cool off. So therefore, sort of given the saying that people in Eretz Yisrael were killed by the heat. So before, actually, when Rosh Lakish, so one of the Mepharshim explains that when Rosh Lakish was asking on Rabbi Yochanan, you were saying the Mabul didn't fall in Eretz Yisrael, so why would there be bones there in the first place? He wasn't aware that Rabbi Yochanan would answer they were killed by the heat. But in fact, they were, but nevertheless, he could answer, sure, they were killed by the heat, but nevertheless, afterwards, they were able to bury them. Ikadamri, again with this one as well as a different version, that it's not Rish Lakish using this pasuk to ask on Rabbi Yochanan, but the other way around, Esvid of Yochanan and Rish Lakish, in the second version of Yochanan asks Rish Lakish, that the pasuk is Mikola Shebacharova Mesu, everything that was on dry land died. So Fakirik, we could say, Bishlema, the Didamina lo Yared Mabel out Israel, according to me, who says that the Mabel did not fall in out Israel, that means it was a patch of dry land at the time. Mishum Hochi, Habicharova, so it comes out there would have been places in out Israel that remained dry. Because that's what the pasuk is saying, the charava, in the dry land, implying that even during the Mabel, there were patches of dry land. Other mephoros explain, by the way, on the Sukkim, you know, it's not as though there's a wall around Eretz Yisrael. If it rained in all the surrounding country, eventually the water was going to inundate Eretz Yisrael as well. All it means is, in other words, that nevertheless, there would have been higher places in Eretz Yisrael where the water didn't reach. So the Shlokesh, so Rabbi Yochanan would be saying, that's how I understand the pasuk. But according to you, what do you mean everything that was on the dry land? There was no dry land at that point. And Rish Lakish says, Choroba, Shoisim Ikra, it just means what was dry land before now is inundated with water and everybody there died. So, Vamai Korele Choroba, well then why call it dry land if now it's not dry? The answer is Kedid of Chista. The answer is we would understand that like what Rav Chista says. Domer of Chista, the dirt of Mabel, Lenigzer of Zera of Dogim Shabayam. During the Mabel, there was no gzera of all the land animals, all the people and all the land animals were killed, but not the fish in the sea. Because the passage says everything that was on dry land died, implying the dogim shalayam, not the fish in the sea. Before we should talk about, because the fish, all flesh had corrupted their way. People and even animals were mating not with their kind, but the fish never did that. So it doesn't mean that all fish survived the Mabel, but the fish as a whole survived the Mabel. Rabbi Victor Miller points out an interesting point in a couple of his books. The geologists have found, for example, on the top of the mountains, even on top of the Himalayas, they found fossils of fish. How did there come to be fish over there? Would be from the Mabel, because there were tremendous currents of water, boiling water, as we just said before. And Bepashtus, it must have sometimes killed some schools of fish, and therefore their remains wound up on the mountains. But the fish as a whole were not affected about a novel. The Ramban explains on the pasuk, but how did the boiling water not kill them? So the Ramban on the pasuk brings from the Medrash that in the ocean the marble didn't fall. Or even the Ramban himself says, fine, even if you say they didn't run away to the ocean, but nevertheless, maybe only the upper layer of the water was boiling, and the rest of it below was normal temperature, and therefore they just survived deeper down in the water for the 12 months of the marble. Okay. In any case, the point is, according to Rish Lakish, that's why the pasuk focuses on the word charava, dry land, to imply that the creatures that were never on dry land in the first place, the fish, were not affected by the matter. There's an interesting vort on it that says that this is a deeper reason. This is one of the deeper reasons why we eat fish first on Shabbos. Before we eat meat, the fish didn't have to go through the whole process of cleansing in the marble because they're already on a higher ruchniistic level, and therefore we start with that. Okay. The Gemara continues. I can understand, according to the opinion, that the Mabel did not fall in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, that explains how the Re'aim was able to survive over there. The Re'aim is far too big to go into the Keva, so how are the Re'aim? And after the Mabel, it would be that they lived out the Mabel in Eretz Yisrael. Tosva says, what about the heat we just said? The answer is the Re'aim is a big enough creature that the heat wouldn't affect it. So that explains that. Elo Amanda Omar Yoran, but if you say according to Rish Lakish that the marble rains did fall in Eretz Yisrael as well, Rema Hechakam, how did the Re'aim survive the marble? It couldn't fit into the Teva. The answer is Omar Rabyane Guriya Sikhnisaba Teva. Rabyane says they didn't bring in full size Re'aim into the Teva. You're right, they wouldn't fit. They brought in baby Re'aims into the Teva. So the Gemara says, but even a baby Re'aim is gigantic. But Amar Rav Avachana, Lididi Chozi Li'uzvila Jereima Bas Yoima, I personally saw a baby Re'aim that was born that very day. Tosfos brings over here, this Gemara is also in Baba Basra. You have all the stories of Rav Avachana over there, and this is one of them. Tosfos brings a Girsa over there from the Rashbam, that it's not Uzula de Rema, but Uzula de Yama. That would be a kind of fish. But from all Gemara, it's clear, because we just said the fish were not affected in a general way by the Mabel, and therefore we have to have the Girsa over here, Uzula de Rema, a young Re'im. The word Uzula means a baby animal, a calf. Tosfos, by the way, digresses and talks about, in later times, they use the word re'im to refer to the buffalo. But it's not so. In fact, Tosfos points out that the Gemara is describing a very gigantic animal, and the fact is that they're the buffaloes, they're big animals, but they're not nearly so big that they couldn't have brought them into the Teva. And you have other things as well. You have psukim that imply that a re'im is intractable and you can't use it for work. Buffaloes, they can. So therefore, so the point is the re'im is not the buffalo. There are different opinions. There are different possibilities that are brought up what the re'im is, in fact. From all Gemara, it seems it was a gigantic animal, but there's other possibilities that have been brought up of animals that we're familiar with that are a might be. In any case, so Rabbi Baba Chana says, I saw a young re'im that was born that day. It was the size of a hautover, and and you should know how tover is 40 parsa in size, which is approximately 100 miles. Mashcha betzavre tzlosa parsi, the length of the creature's neck, and remember this is a day old, this is a newborn baby, tzlosa parsi was 3 parsa, marabasa deresha, the place where he would have to put his head to rest, parso palga, is 1.5 parsa, and this animal was so gigantic, Roma kova, it gave out, it excreted waste, the Sachar Yardana, and dammed up the Yarden River. So in other words, even a baby, symbolically, by Marshall explains in Baba Basra, that symbolically this refers to Yoshua, who was like a newborn baby. He had just taken over, and already he's conquering mighty kings in Eretz Yisrael, and he explains the significance of the size of a hautover, and the size of the neck, and the size of the head, of all that, and dammed up the Yarden, in that when they first came into Eretz Yisrael, the Yarden flow was stopped, and they were able to cross. The Vilna Gaon there gives a different explanation. He says that it hints at a person who's starting out learning Torah, but he fancies himself to be much greater than he is, and he thinks he's of the caliber of the greatest Talmid Chachamim, would that ever were. And when he finds out that nobody accepts him for that, then he tries to befoul the river, as in to put down the genuine Talmid Chachamim. Anyway, so we're not necessarily saying, and a couple of Mefarshim talk about, Rabbi Baba Chana is not necessarily describing a literal large animal that he saw. There isn't necessarily a large animal like that in the world. It means symbolically, some of the Foshim say he saw it in a dream, etc. But nevertheless, still, the Gemara is asking like on an intellectual level. Given that we're describing a creature of that size, how would you understand from that point of view how such a thing could fit in the Teva? Ben Yoyada says this is an example of pupil of Torah. We're not just meant to learn the practicalities in Torah. We also have to figure out, we also have to think of the hypotheticals in Torah. So this is almost like one of those hypotheticals. We're describing a creature of that size. Fine, it's not meant that literally there was one of that size, but if there were, how would it have gone into the Teva? So the question is, how would that work? So Rabbi Yechanan answers, you know what, you're right, they didn't put the whole re'im, the whole baby re'im into the Teva, only the head of the re'im. And that way, at least it didn't have to breathe the foul air of the marble. The rest of it would be tied to the Teva from the outside. Didn't Rabbi Baba Chana just say that just the space for the head of the animal is a parasa and a half, which is about... Parasa and a half would be about three or four miles approximately, so far bigger than the Teva. They just put in the tip of the snout of the animal into the Teva. The rest of it had to be outside. The tip of the snout would fit in. So according to that opinion, that's how the Re'im was able to survive the marble. There's an interesting vote on this that's brought from Meir Shapiro. He explains that this is all a metaphor of Chazal, using this as a metaphor for the vicissitudes of the Jewish people in Golos, like during the Mabel, so to speak. So we're compared to the Re'im, which is the largest animal that there is, and we are greater in Mila than all the other nations. So the question is, how are we saved during the terrible Mabel, during the terrible storms and vicissitudes of Golos? If you say Eretz Yisrael, the marble didn't fall like Rabbi Yochanan, then fine. You could say that the Jewish people, as long as we're in Eretz Yisrael, then we're safe. But if it reaches Eretz Yisrael also, as Rish Lakish says, and how? So first, Rabbi Yana says they brought in baby animals as a teva, representing that we bring in our babies, we bring in our children, and they learn in the Beis Medrash, which is like the teva that protects us. But then the Gemara says that even now Rashi says that the Uzila, Rashi uses the expression specifically that this is, Rashi says Uzila de Yama. Rashi does have the Girsa over here, de Yama, not that, which Tosfos rejects that Girsa and says de Rema, but Rashi says Uzila de Yama does not mean a big. Does not mean a baby fish, as the Rashbam says in Baba Basra. As Tosfos says, it does mean an Uzila of a land animal, but it lives by the seas. So therefore, so that represents, in other words, Jews who are living close to the Goyim and in danger of assimilating among them. So how is even bringing those children into the Teva, how is that going to save the Jewish people? So the answer is they brought their head into the Teva. At least the head of those Jews who are living among the Goyim should be in the Teva, in the base of Knesset, the base of Medrash, and that'll save us. But the Gemara says the Jewish people are very, very great, and they have a very, very great Yetzirah. So therefore, how is even the teva of the shul or the Beis Medrash going to save them? Especially we have parasa palga, parasa and a half representing. You have some Jews who are like parasa, a complete thing, but then you have other Jews who are only palga, they're only like half Jews, and they don't have this connection. So the answer is rosh choitma misul teva. At least they put the snout in the teva. At least they breathe the pure air. At least they breathe the pure air of the Beis Medrash, and they may not understand very much, but at least that has an effect on them, and they'll absorb some of the atmosphere of Torah, and that'll help protect them from the terrible marble. So now the Gemara continues, and Rameir gets out from that part as well. The Gemara says, "Well, kasagi teva, isn't the teva moving the whole time? If you tell me only the snout of the re'em is in the teva, then how does it not get dislodged, and eventually then it's not going to be able to breathe the air in the teva?" And it's going to suffocate from the heat of the marble. Another way of explaining that, in other words, the question is that some places the teva would be over shallower water and some places over deeper water. So what are you going to do? Is the rain going to swim whenever they're in deep water? And the answer is, Amar Shlokish Kaun of Koshru B'Teva. The answer is they tied its horns to the Teva. So that way it stayed in place. So now Rameir Shapiro continues with his drasha on this, that the question is that, the Teva is moving around, and the Sionis are so great that the Yetzahara is going to knock down the Beis Medrash itself. And the Beis Medrash itself is going to go from high to low. People are going to think, in Ikkus Yidim Shikha, that the Beis Medrash is Chas V'Shalom an unimportant thing. So then how are we going to save the Jewish people? And the answer is Karen of Kosher B'Teva. The answer is the wounds which represent the rich Yidden who support Torah. They are tied to the Torah. They're tied to the Beis Medrash. And they help keep the Beis Medrash afloat. And that way it's able to save us from the marble. And eventually we have, as the marble finishes off, Yav Sha'aretz, the ground is dried, and the terrible rains of the marble are all gone, and V'hoyasham L'malach HaFalaretz. Okay, getting back to the Gemara. So the question is, okay, so you're telling me that the Re'em was, so you're telling me ultimately that the baby Re'em, now, I skipped a line, actually. So they put the snout into the table. So the Gemara says, well, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Loyoda Mabul Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan himself says the Mabul didn't fall with Eretz Yisrael. So according to him, they just kept the Re'em in Eretz Yisrael. Why does he need to mention this whole point about the snout being in the table? Yes, it was a divid of Shlokish from her. Rabbi Yochanan just wants to clarify, according to the Shlokish, how would it have worked? Rabbi Yochanan holds that the rain didn't fall in Eretz Yisrael. But Rish Lakish holds it does, so Rabbi Yochanan explains how Rish Lakish won't understand how the Re'em survived. So again, the question is, Rakasaga Teva, the Teva is moving, and the answer is, Amar Rish Lakish, kind of Koshra the Teva, they tied its horns to the Teva, and so it went along with it. The Gemara says, "Well, Omer of Chista Anshe Dera Mabul Beroischen Kilkalu over Roischen Nidoinu." Didn't we say that the people of the Mabul sinned with boiling hot Zera, and they were punished with boiling hot water? So how did the boiling water not kill the Re'em, which is on the outside of the Teva? So the Gemara says, Velitai Meir, new according to your Svara that you're asking the question, Heichi Sagya, forget about the Re'em. The Teva was covered with tar on the inside and the outside. If the water was boiling, the tar would have melted off. But Og Melech HaBoshan Hecha Koyin, you also have to ask, where was Og Melech HaBoshan? Well, the Gemara tells us in Nidya that he also survived the Mabul by being on the outside of the table. So also Hecha Koyin, where would he have stood and not been harmed by the boiling water? Fine, the fact that he wouldn't have been harmed by the heat, like Tosva says before, their aim wouldn't have been harmed by the heat either because of its bulk, because of its size. But how would his skin have survived? Elam Nes Nasar Bahem. We have to say a Nes happened for them, both for Oig, and so we can answer for their aim babies as well. Shemitzananu, Bitsidia Teva, the water, and for the mob, and for the Teva itself, the water near the walls of the Teva was cooled off, even though the rest of the water is boiling, but the water near the teva is cooler, and therefore so the tar didn't melt, and therefore Oig and the Re'im are able to stand. So Rashi actually says in the end, it comes out maybe the Re'im didn't even need the teva. It's just such a large animal that it would have been able to survive the marble regardless, as long as it's near the teva. So that answers how the Re'im survived the point of Shlokish. So the question is, Rav Shimon Lakish, Nehi Nami Diyorin Mabul Eretz Yisrael. Fine, but we have to ask the point of Rish Lakish. Fine, you're saying the Mabul fell into Eretz Yisrael. The whole thing we got into this is because Rish Lakish holds that the result is that there are dead bodies remaining in the soil of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you have a problem of Tumas HaTahorim, and therefore you have to specifically check an area before you're going to use it for the Parah Adumah. The question is, Vaholei Posh. The question is, those dead bodies did not remain there. They drained out elsewhere. The Amr Rish Lakish, Lama Nikla Shema Mitzula, why is Babel called Mitzula, which means the swamp, the low-lying land? Chakom Mesin Mabel Mitzala Lusham. All the dead of the Mabel were all swamped to there, and the water brought all the dead of the Mabel there, and then the water evaporated, and the bodies remained there. So therefore it's called Mitzula, Meloshan Solal, Meloshan, that they sank there. But Rabbi Yechon, Rama Lama Nikla Shema Shinar, Rabbi Yechon says another name for Babel is Shinar. Why is it, as we find in Chumash Bereshis, so why is that Shekom Mesim Mabel Nina Rusham? Because all the Mesim and the Mabel were shaken out over there. Same idea, in other words, that the water from everywhere else in the world, Babel is a low-lying area, so the last place where the water dried up is there, and therefore all of the debris and all the everything from the Mabel wound up over there. So the point is, it didn't remain in Eretz Yisrael. Fine, but it's impossible according to Rish Lakish, if the rain fell in Eretz Yisrael, that there shouldn't be some body parts that got stuck in the dirt and wound up over there underground. So therefore, those are the ones that he's concerned about Tumas HaTahorim. Speaking of this name of Shinar for Babel, the Gemara says, Amar Rababahu, Lomer Nikla Shema Shinar, why is Babel called Shinar, besides the reason of Yechanan said that the mace and the marble were shaken out, and they were shaken out, and then fell to the ground over there. Another reason, Shemana Eres Ashireha, it shakes out its rich people. The rich people over there do not have rachmanus on people, and do not give tzedakah like they're supposed to, and the result is that its rich people don't remain rich for very long. So the Gemara says, V'okachazin in Dehavu, the fact is we see that Babel does have rich people. The answer is, Tlosa Dori Le'mashim. But you never have three generations in a row in Babel where you have the people are rich. Why? Because they're not Balei Tzedakah. So therefore, so even one generation, two generations, it might say, but afterwards it falls apart. Okay. The Gemara says another explanation, another point. Speaking of, we said that all the Mesim and the Mabel were brought to Babel. Omer of Ami, Kol Oichol Me'Afarash of Babel. If a person eats the dirt of Babel, so we're not talking people that stamp eat dirt, we're talking about the Gemara and Shabbos explains, and Rashi seems to imply over here that we're talking about the Gemara over there, and Shabbos and Rashi explain that we're talking about a kind of earth that has medicinal properties. Even nowadays, you know, earth has certain minerals in it. Sometimes a person is low on minerals, he might eat some of that. There is actually a pathological condition called pica, where a person eats things that are not normally edible, and sometimes that's because a person is vitamin deficient, and therefore their body naturally craves it. But they also have nowadays, they found different kinds of antibiotics in soil, so that it could be that a person is eating it for those reasons. In any case, the point is, if he eats from Babel, kilo oichum sara voisa, as if he's eating the flesh of his ancestors, namely his ancestors of Jews who died there and are buried in Babel. The Gemara explains over here, the Gemara doesn't want to say it means his ancestors are the people who died in the Babel because they're not his ancestors. So therefore, we have to understand that it means his ancestors, the Jews, lived in Babel over periods of hundreds of years and are buried over there. Similarly to Braisa, anybody who eats from the dust of Babel, kilo oichum, is as if he's eating the flesh of his ancestors. The yeshon, kilo oichum, shkotzim or rabasim, some say it's as if he's eating creepy, crawling, disgusting creatures, because their bodies, their carcasses, as we just said, would have wound up in Babel, because it's a low-lying area, and therefore now when he eats from the dirt there, even hundreds of years later, even thousands of years later, there's still bits of these shrotsim or amasim embedded in there, and therefore he's eating that. So that's how that also proves this point that the water or the marble drained to Babel and everything fell to the ground there. Everything sank to the ground there. But nevertheless, as the Rish Lakish is saying, there could still be little bits and pieces that remain in Eretz Yisrael, which is why, according to him, there could be Tumas HaTahorim in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, when you're preparing the Parah Adumah, you specifically need to check a spot and only then prepare the Parah Adumah there, whereas Rabbi Yechon is not concerned about that.